The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A team of researchers with Trinity College Dublin has found that personal beliefs, the worry of possible future litigation and a culture of practice within maternity care are all factors weighing on the minds of clinicians when deciding about cesarean sections for first time and expectant mothers. The study, which interviewed 15 midwives and 20 senior obstetricians from three maternity units, found that more than one third of first time mothers are giving birth by cesarean section. Now, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Chrissia Lynch, Chair of the Association for Improvements in the Maternity Services, and by Dr. Peter Boylan, former Master of the National Maternity Hospital at Hollis Street. Good morning and welcome to you both. Chrissia, first of all, what is your reaction to this report? Any real surprises there?
Well, I think, first of all, for anybody who's listening who recently had a cesarean birth that they didn't plan, just to say this piece might be a little bit triggering for them, so we need to be sensitive to that. Well, just to say that in general, service users expect birth to be evidence-based. They expect if they're having a cesarean, it's going to be on the basis of clinical need. They want to be a partner in their own care. They're looking for standardized care, of course, so it shouldn't matter whether you're having your baby in Kilkenny or in the Rotunda. You should have the same kind of care, and that you're in the centre of your care, because all of those things make care very safe for you. And we have to point out that Ireland is a very safe place to give birth. So that's what people are expecting. So when you see a study like this, which would imply that there are lots of other factors at play, that there's an element of luck, for example, involved, it kind of depends on whether your obstetrician is older or you're younger. That's one of the things that came out, whether your obstetrician or your midwife feels inclined to support you now in continuing or in your vaginal birth, or whether they're the type of person that want to intervene more quickly. And of course, that huge fear of litigation. And also one of the things, which I think is a really big thing that was brought up, is that if a medical team have had a difficult experience, if there's been a very difficult medical experience recently, that's going to weigh on them. And I think maybe Peter will say a little bit about this. One of the things that we need to look at is that people who are working in the health services also are subject to traumatic experiences and need appropriate support as well.
Chrissia, just to clarify one thing, you said it might depend on the age of the clinician, and you mentioned older clinicians and younger clinicians, whether they're midwives or whether they're obstetricians. Which cohort, younger or older, is more likely to opt for a cesarean?
The younger cohort. So that's something that came out, and that's certainly something that I definitely have been aware of, and I've even discussed this with Peter before, is that, you know, if you have a consultant obstetrician looking after you, there's probably going to be a little bit more leeway. They have a lot more experience. Whereas if you are dealing with a younger, maybe a senior reg or a junior reg, they have to be very accountable to clinical review, and they're going to be perhaps more inclined to intervene more quickly. So those factors, as well as private obstetric factors, also have an impact. And, you know, we've had a lot of discussion about private obstetric practice possibly coming to an end. And another thing this study showed was that people who are going privately are more likely to have a cesarean birth. And just to say that the rates of cesarean birth are very, very high. Your readers can go and Google maternity safety statements. They can find the latest statement for their local unit. And we see now that five units, so the latest statements, have a primary, that's first-time mother, primary person cesarean birth rate of over 50%, and that is very high.
You have to wonder, therefore, because at 50% of cesarean, and if you presume there was a clinical need that the baby or mother might not have made it if they didn't have a cesarean, at that rate, the population of the world would be a fraction of what it is today, if that was the normal rate. And clearly, this is something that's happening because of electives by either clinician or expectant mother.
Well, that is a factor. I have to say, Pat, that my phone burst today with the number of those little red angry emojis from women who said that one of the things that was cited in the study was that in Ireland we're fatter, shorter, and I think heavier. I think those three words were used, and it was used by one of the obstetricians in one of the comments in the study. And that was the reason that we have high cesarean rates. So that, you know, people choose elective cesareans not necessarily for those reasons. They choose elective cesareans because they feel they have fears that they can't override. Perhaps they have perinatal mental health issues. Perhaps they had very difficult previous experiences. You know, those are all valid.
I can understand.
There's something wrong with somebody.
I can understand all those issues where people have previous experiences, and not all of those experiences will refer to an actual birth. There could have been miscarriage. There could have been IVF, and all of that. But when we're talking about first-time mothers, over 50%, I mean, there may not be much history. So this is like the precautionary principle. Let's not get sued. Let's not have a misadventure. Let's not find ourselves with complications. Let's have a cesarean.
Well, you're absolutely correct there, Pat. And I think our society is very litigious with respect to maternity care. There's always about €50 million waiting to be handed out in the high courts based on cerebral palsy issues. And one of the things that we definitely need to think about is, are we supporting people who have had difficult experiences and who do need payouts to support children with very difficult health problems? Is the high court litigious route the way forwards? Because there are other options that are used in other countries that don't place those kinds of stresses on clinicians.
All right. Peter is listening to that conversation, and Chrissy has mentioned that you and she have had conversations on this topic before.
Yes.
So what do you make of this report? It is not, if you like, numerically representative. It is a sample, but it may well be reasonably typical.
Well, I think it's a very useful study and is to be welcomed. One of the things that is fixable would be the litigation issue. And if you take Sweden, for example, which has been running an average rate of about 17% over the past few decades, whereas in Ireland it's 30%, in Turkey it's 54%. So, you know, they're way outliers. But litigation is an issue undoubtedly in Ireland, and it's one of the things that obviously has raised its head. And my colleague, Dr. Declan Keane, another former Master of Hall Street, has been quite vocal in this recently, and his comments are to be commended. We need to reform the litigation system. Children who have serious disabilities, for whatever reason, need to be cared for by the state. That's the first thing.
If okay, so problem, this business of suing in order to secure the future of a child with severe difficulties as a result of birth, they shouldn't have to sue in the court to make sure that that child is cared for.
No, absolutely not. They shouldn't. And it's incredibly stressful and painful for parents to have to go through all of that. And they may not end up being successful. So they've gone through all of this angst and so on over the years. And it does take a long time for these cases to reach resolution, either through the court or through settlement. But so the state should care for these children, undoubtedly, without any questions being asked. But if the parents or if anybody has a question about the quality of the care that the parents or the mother has received during the course of her pregnancy, then that should be investigated by recognised experts, possibly from outside the state if people are more comfortable with that, who then make recommendations to that either clinician or the hospital or their organisation as to how they can avoid these particular conditions or situations in the future. And that would short-circuit problems, because it can sometimes take 10 or 15 years for a case to reach resolution, and the problems in the hospital may have been going on and on and on over those 10 or 15 years without being
fixed. And presumably if for lack of care or just nature taking its course, the child doesn't make it through that process, dies beforehand, presumably the litigation on behalf of the child also dies.
It probably does.
Because there was no compensation.
I can't answer that. There's obviously no compensation for ongoing care, but there may be compensation for care that the parents have had to expend until the child has died. Yeah. So that's one thing that could be fixed. And if you look at Sweden, where they don't have the same litigation issues, that may be part of the reason why their section rate is lower than ours. There is a study ongoing at the moment between the Karolinska Institute in Sweden and Canada, looking at possibly other factors like maternal health, obesity and so on. And Mike Robson, again, another former master of Hollow Street, developed this standardized analysis of cesarean section by first-time mother induction, etc., etc. And that has been adopted internationally and recommended by the WHO. So that's a very good way of analysing cesarean section. And most hospitals in the country are now using that system. And that will allow you to focus in on where is the problem. with, for example, induction of labour is undoubtedly, it triples your chances of a cesarean section on a first birth. If you can have an uncomplicated first birth vaginally, the chances of anything going wrong or needing a cesarean section on any subsequent birth are absolutely tiny. So all of the focus and care, and that's what this study
brought out. But therefore, if you do, for whatever reason, have a cesarean on your first child, you've learned nothing really, except that you probably have to go cesarean on your second.
No, not necessarily. No. It depends on the reasons for the cesarean section the first time round. For example, if it's a breech presentation where the baby's coming bottom first, almost all first-time mothers with a breech presentation are delivered by cesarean section now. And that's a big change in practice over the years.
And that's for safety.
Well, it's as a consequence of a study from Canada, which subsequently was proven to actually not advocate. I mean, it was a misinterpretation of the data.
But now it's become standard.
Now it's become standard. It's a classic example of how bad science can influence practice. However, that's one reason. So if a woman, say, has an elective section for that reason on her first, there's no reason why she shouldn't attempt a normal spontaneous vaginal delivery on her second. And if she achieves that, well, then, you know, there's no problems in the future if she's having more children. So that's one thing. And undoubtedly, the way a hospital is organised, mothers tend to be older. There is undoubtedly an increase in overweight in our population, and that leads on to diabetes, which results in bigger babies and more complicated pregnancies. Infertility is an issue.
But what would be, and maybe Chrissia might want to join in on this, what would be custom and practice if someone does come in who is older, a geriatric mother at 35, isn't that the term?
No, that's the wrong term. No, just a mother who's 35, just leave it at that. Yeah, there's a lot of older language, which is...
Yeah, well, I heard that language, that's how why I quoted
it. Yeah, I know. But I mean, that's I'm afraid, Pat, that's a bit old-fashioned.
It's a bit old-fashioned, okay. It's a term that stuck with me, and you can see why.
Yeah,
but someone who's short... is that a contraindication for a natural birth shortness?
No,
I wouldn't have thought so.
No, not if the labour progresses normally and there's no complications, there's no reason why a shorter woman shouldn't have a normal spontaneous vaginal delivery.
And then obesity.
Obesity is a risk, yeah. There's a higher section rate because, unfortunately, the uterus tends to be less efficient in terms of its contractions in pushing the baby out. And so there is a higher rate of cesarean section in overweight women.
I just want to come in there just to say, and I know you're aware of this study too, that there was a very interesting study that came out a few years ago, which looked at the outcomes for people who were defined or classified as being obese. So they looked at people who were mildly obese, and then they looked at people who were extremely obese. So interestingly enough, the people who were mildly obese had a much higher rate of cesarean birth, just as Peter has described. But the people who were extremely obese actually had a much lower rate because it was felt that cesarean section in and of itself would not be helpful to them and could be a risk. So everything was done in their labours by their staff, the people that took care of them, to try and ensure they didn't get a cesarean section. So I think it was a very interesting study because it also showed that if there was a motivation to do certain things, I mean, you need more person power, of course, that you could actually change clinical outcomes.
That's very interesting because you can see that a surgery for anyone who's obese of any kind is hazardous.
It is. It's much more difficult. And the post-operative complications tend to be higher as well. Infection rates, postpartum hemorrhage and clots and so on. So, yeah, I mean, you certainly wouldn't encourage people to be very obese in the hopes that they have a more normal vaginal delivery.
I'll read you some of the texts coming in. I'm 5'6". I weighed 11.5 stone at 9 months pregnant and I was 41. I had a natural birth as that's what I wanted. But the week I was due, I was brought in for a check and was told I could have a C-section as the labour wards were full and it would be quicker. I asked, was there any risk to my baby at that check that would mean I required a C-section? And I was told, no. It was more to do with managing the beds. I did get a good laugh when I heard what that consultant said, given my experience. What about that, Peter, managing beds? Let's have a cesarean. Let's whip that baby out now and you can be home by Sunday.
Well, undoubtedly, there are infrastructural problems right across the Irish Health Service. Everybody knows that. You just got to look at the news today. And certainly the building of elective hospitals would certainly sort out an awful lot of our current problems, as would increasing in staff levels and so on and in the community, because one of the problems with getting people out of hospital is there's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah.
So I can discharge a patient today but she can't go anywhere because there's no nursing home bed. If I'm a consultant, say, for an older population.
Yeah, and in any event, people don't spend very long in the maternity units now after birth compared to yesteryear.
Yeah, I mean, years ago, women having a cesarean section used to stay, say, 7 or 10 days. Now they're out after 3 days, maybe 3 or 4 days max. And a woman having her first or second baby can go home within a few hours with good midwifery support services in the community.
And did either of your guests notice that a huge percentage of these cesareans happen on a Friday? Chrissia?
Well, what we do know is that there's a much higher rate of inductions at certain times of the year. And partly that's because hospital infrastructure have their hands tied. So we've just gone through one of those. So you will notice if you go and look on the CSO data, you know, when's the most popular day to be born in Ireland, when's the least popular day. So just in case you're not sure, the least popular day is the 29th of February. So that's a bit of a scam, really. But then if you look at the other least popular days, they include the 24th, the 25th and the 26th of December. So we're kind of losing our Christmas babies. We're losing our Noels and our Robins because so many people are offered induction earlier in December to move away from the fact that you get a lot of people presenting during the Christmas break. And some of those inductions will not have the clinical need. And as Peter has already stated, induction of labor will increase your chance of cesarean section significantly. So we do know that. We do know that there's going to be dates in the calendar where you're going to have a much higher induction rate and potentially a higher cesarean rate. So that caller actually is correct. I do want to say one thing, though. There's been so many comments about the fat and short, and the comment that was made was comparing our population to the population of the Netherlands. So just to say, on national radio, the average height of an Irish woman is 5'6". The average height of a woman in the Netherlands is 5'5" versus 5'6". And the difference in age is 10 months. So that is not really significantly different. There are issues with perhaps being older or perhaps being more overweight. But to make that direct comparison between us and the Netherlands is just not evidence-based. So let's just draw a line under that before you get another 1,000 texts about
right.
it.
So finally, Peter, just for women who are maybe pregnant now and are wondering about all of this stuff that's being reported from the study, you know, who makes the decision? Can they decide, I'm too nervous or too posh to push the cliche, I don't like it, but anyway, I want a cesarean. Will a clinician give them a cesarean if they want it? Can they literally elect to go that way rather than a vaginal birth?
Well, what the clinician needs to do is to explore with the woman the reasoning behind it. And sometimes it's fear, which can be allayed by good education, antenatal education. Sometimes it's a woman may have had an unfortunate experience, perhaps with abuse as a child. And that's something that you know, needs to be teased out. And sometimes it's just because of convenience. It could be her age. It could be a history of infertility. It could be a whole range of reasons why a woman would elect. But the important thing is to discuss with her what the reasons are and then come to a joint reasonable
but
decision.
But not to be a smart ass about this, could it be the consultant's about to go on his holidays or her holidays next week and therefore we'll get this baby out now because I'm off to Rome on Monday?
No. when we would be away on holidays, you inform the woman with plenty of time and you discuss with her, you know, who's going to be covering and hopefully that person will see the patient. Just to get back to the weekends and all that, there's no elective work in any hospital on any weekend. So elective cesarean sections for breech, for a whole variety of repeat cesareans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, twins, triplets, all the rest of that sort of stuff, they are not done on the weekends. And that's one of the reasons why the birth numbers were so low over a weekend.
We will leave it there. Dr. Chrissia Lynch, Chair of the Association for Improvements in the Maternity Services, and Dr. Peter Boylan, former Master of the National Maternity Hospital. Thank you both very much for...
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
For joining us.